Hi, welcome to, would you believe it's episode 18 of the Beerfest Brewers Roundtables. This was an interesting one. We had Kevin from Third Barrel in Ireland. We had Javier from Brew and Roll in Spain. And we had Kjetil, who was both from Solo in Crete and from Axiom in the Czech Republic. So, and for those who don't know, Kjetil was also responsible for opening the first ever craft brewery in Norway. Ogneo, so he has a lot of experience. So we hit a lot in this one. We talked, about the markets, about the craft scenes in each country, what's popular, what's not. We got into the value of different techniques, the difficulty in finding simple things that you don't think about, the way the ingredients differ from country to country, and how it can be very hard to get good grain or hops in one country and easier in the other. So it was interesting. It was wide ranging. We were also joined by Taras from Octo Microbrewery in Cyprus for a while. So he brought in another interesting perspective. And all in all, it was a good chat, which I think you'll enjoy. I do have to apologize about the sound quality. It just wasn't great for a lot of this. I think you can still hear everything, but you might have to strain a little. But hopefully you'll find it worth it because I think it was a good chat. As usual, I'd appreciate if you could give us a rating. And also, if you'd prefer to watch the video of this, the recordings of all the sessions are available at beerfest.com, where you can also sign up to take part in future sessions. And we do have some good ones coming up. So that's it. Let's move on and let's talk beer. Everybody, today we have with us today we have Kevin from Third Barrel in Ireland. We have Javier from Brew and Roll in Spain, and we have Kettle from both Axiom and Solo. He's having a little bit of trouble, technical difficulty, so we're going to try and get him on at the same time. So bear with us while we're trying technical issues at the same time as trying to drink beer and talk about beer and all that sort of mad stuff, and we'll get there eventually. Kevin, you've been around since 2003, 2004?
No, 2000 and well, I've been around since 1981, really. But no, we lost our first beer in 2013.
2013. Okay, that's
Yeah.
I know by a decade, but sure, what's a
Oh,
decade between
what a
friends?
decade between friends, yeah.
How about you, Javier? When did you start Brew and Roll?
I can hear you right now.
Okay, we can see your eyes.
Beautiful eyes.
No, I think it worked.
Yeah. So when did you start Brew and Roll?
We started in 2015. No, 15, 15.
Okay, so you're both around the same time. It's about six-ish
Yeah, like
years ago.
6 years ago.
Okay, so Javier is, or sorry, Kettle would be the one who's been here the longest. He started, I think that's where I got confused. He's 2004. He started in Norway. So I have a couple of questions. Like I said, the things throwing me out here a little bit, but yeah. So what's the like since you started? What have you noticed about the beer scenes? Like, what kind of beers are you brewing now? Is it anything different than you were brewing when you started?
Yeah, of course. I've always liked traditional styles.
Okay.
So in the beginning, we started with many traditional styles and just a few IPAs. And right now, everybody wants fucking IPAs. That's all we can brew. No, not. It's not the only thing we brew, but we still keep on with the traditional styles because I like very much, and I think for the beginners, for people who doesn't know craft beer,
Yeah.
it's easier starting with that kind of beers and not going direct to a strong IPA or NEIPAs or hazy IPA or triple IPA. So we brew almost every style, but it's true that people want hazy IPAs, NEIPAs, the name you wanna put in that kind of.
Right. Just pull everybody up here. Sorry, I just noticed. And is that the same, Kev, for you? You've is it?
Yeah, so when we started in 2013, I suppose there was it was Ireland's craft beer scene was a bit different from where it is now. So most breweries would have had a core range of a hoppy beer, be it an IPA or a pale ale, a red ale, and a stout or a lager. And that's what we started. We started with a clean session IPA, which is still brewed today. But yeah, in the last 4 or 5 years now, it's been dominated by hazy IPAs, New England IPAs, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, we try and brew a broad range of beers. We have 3 brands, so it gives us a good platform to brew a lot of different beer styles. But, you know, the only thing that's people are just hop crazy at the minute.
Right.
You know, if we could brew a New England style IPA, and it will sell out in absolutely no time. But then if we go and try and brew something traditional like a Goza or a lager or something like that, it's a harder sell.
Right.
You know, people are just hop crazy. Now, I don't mind it because I'm addicted to hops myself. So, you know, it suits us for what we like doing. But, oh, yeah, it's just the world has gone IPA crazy at the minute. I don't see it changing for a while, to be honest.
Right, that's what I was going to ask, because I don't know, maybe just because I've started paying more interest, but, like, I keep seeing a lot more interest in saisons and lambics and stuff like that coming in. But I was wondering whether that's kind of... Is that still very, very minority?
It's a style that I really like, lambics and so on. The problem is that you can't brew normal beers and lambic in the same place. So we have to choose for the moment.
But I don't think...
I like very much, and where I live in Pamplona, near Pamplona, there's a lot of wine as well. So there's big tradition with the barrels and natural wines. I think it's very interesting with lambics and saison, that kind of beers. It's something that I like very much, but for the moment we can't go in that area. I don't want to have problems with the rest of my beers.
Yeah. But even like I said, the interest, like I just keep hearing saisons are becoming, you know, bigger and bigger. But what you're saying is that it's not really, it's still IPAs and hazy IPAs particularly.
For us, it's like Kevin said before, if you brew an hazy IPA, you know it's going to be sale in 2 weeks. With a traditional style, you will have to put 3 months looking for clients, and it's a shame, but it's how it's working right now.
Yeah, but it's just, I think it's just, it's been led by consumers, because even before, I suppose, the way old IPAs were, you know, clean IPAs, the kind of West Coast style became big around kind of, you know, coming out of probably the mid-2000s onwards, the bolder the beer, the more IBUs you're putting into it, the more bitter, the more harsh. And it started alienating people a little bit, whereas the people who weren't into craft beer would drink one of these old-school IPAs and automatically they'd be like, this is too bitter for me. We're now with this, the kind of the change to the kind of the softer IPAs, the New England-style IPAs, they're a lot more accessible to people. So people who don't drink craft beer could drink a little hazy pale ale and go, oh, well, you know, this is nice and fruity, it's easy drinking, it's this and that. And that's why I think it's become so big, because obviously it's loaded with hops, so all the craft beer heads love it. But it's also lots, it's very much more accessible to the people who weren't into craft beer previously. So there's so many more people coming into craft beer now. They're all going straight in onto hazy IPAs and hazy pale ales. And it just drives that and keeps on driving them. Like, given that craft beer only accounts for probably 5% of beer drinkers in, you know, most of our countries, there's a lot more people to come into it, which means I don't see this kind of thing of hazy IPAs going away anytime soon.
No, it's true that with that kind of beers, there's many people taking interest in craft beer. So really, I think it's helping people to get on in the craft beer. And this is clients for us. It's nice. But I hope that at least 10% or 50% of people who's drinking hazy IPAs is going to try other styles and open the mind, not just for thumos. You know, the thumos is juice.
It's what?
Fruit.
All right.
It's like there's no bitterness.
Yeah.
It's almost not a beer. But I mean, if people are interested in the craft beer because of that kind of beers, let's go.
Yeah, that's it.
It's our work to try to put them in other styles so they can try different things. I don't know. Everybody who is interested in craft beer is okay for me.
Yeah.
He can drink what he wants.
Exactly. That's the way we look at it as well. You know, we're just a brewery. We all we can do is brew our own beers. We can't dictate how people spend their money. You know, and if they want to spend money on hazy IPAs or they want to spend money on sours, that's them. You know, all we can do is try to make sure we have a beer style brew that they want to buy. And that's it.
Yeah.
It's easy.
And just before we started there, Kevin and myself were saying we both tried some of the, well, the stouts. Obviously, he didn't try yours last night because yours hasn't arrived, but I tried it, and it was fantastic stout. What I was saying last week, I don't know if Kevin agrees with me, but like, to me, imperial stouts are almost a separate category. You mentioned stout to me, being from Ireland, it's just, lighter Guinness style, and the other ones are kind of a different beer.
Yeah, that's it. But the weird thing about Ireland is that from outside, people think Ireland is, the home of the stout, because of the big brands that we have. But in actuality, it's very hard for a brewery in Ireland to brew a stout because stout drinkers tend to be Guinness drinkers, and they tend not to move away from Guinness. So if we are to brew a 4.5% stout in Ireland, it'll be a lot harder to sell than it's brewing any other style. It's pretty locked up in Ireland. So outside of Ireland, people think, yeah, Ireland's stout country. Everybody, all the brewers, nobody brews, no, not many breweries brew run-of-the-mill standard stouts in Ireland because of Guinness. So that's why we always, most breweries will brew a big imperial stout because that's, as you said, nearly a separate style to a stout. Once the ABV goes over 7%, it should be classed as a proper imperial stout and, put into its own little basket.
Yeah, and what about in Spain? I mean, I wouldn't have thought Spain as being a big stout country.
Sorry?
I wouldn't have thought kind of up where you are as a big stout country. Is there a big demand for it?
You tell me if in Spain people is liking in stouts, imperial stouts.
Do they?
In Spain, you want when you're talking about the stout, you have to talk always imperial stout or Russian imperial stout. There's nobody who drinks a stout with 5 degrees in alcohol. Everybody wants 10, 11, 12. I can't understand why, because I really like stouts with 4 degrees, 5 degrees that you can drink easily. But here, it doesn't work. Everybody wants imperial stout, 10 degrees. There's people who drinks. Of course, you can't have 6 pints. Well, you can have 6 pints, but it's going to be bad. So, you will see, you Brian, you received our beers.
I had your stout last night.
Yeah, Legenbelza, and that one is strong imperial stout. And there's also a barley wine, Paco Fighter. I hope you will like, Kevin, when you will receive them.
Yeah, Monday. I leave the car at home Monday morning so I can enjoy them in the brewery Monday afternoon.
He was flying this morning. I think he has had going to be. It's late, I think. I don't know. He was
Yeah,
flying in the
that's
morning.
okay.
But yes, in Spain about the stout, we have to talk always from 10 degrees upstairs, not lower than that.
And is that the same for all the beers? I'm trying to take a look here. You have even the IPAs are like you're talking at 7%, 8%. You don't do anything lower.
I like beers in 4, 5 degrees, but here everybody wants IPA minimum 6 degrees. I don't know why, but I don't know. People is borracho, how you say? Alcoholics. They want high degrees.
We noticed that as well. IPAs, the sweet spot is between 6 and 7%. I think you get the best IPAs flavor wise from that, but from it's a lot easier to sell as well. Not too strong, not too weak. People, you can feel the bite. It's I think anyway, 6 to 7% is perfect for IPAs in our opinion, anyway.
See, 6, 7, it's okay for me. But I also like session IPAs with 4 degrees that you can drink all day long. After, it's not so easy having a good session IPA. You have to be more careful to have somebody that can hold the bitterness and the hops. But
That's it.
there's a kind of beer that I will like drinking more. So that I can find more, but I can't.
I'll give you some cans to Iker on Monday to bring home. One of our permanent beers called Boom is actually a session IPA. We've been making it since 2013, and it's a Mosaic session IPA. It's 4.5%, but I'll give you some cans to your colleague on Monday to bring home to you to enjoy.
We have another just like yours. Ours is called Cancun. It's a session IPA Mosaic. You say only Mosaic, I mean, and 4.5% as well.
Excellent.
It's the same beer.
Same beer.
Yeah, because someone was saying that, I think Ronan from Brax was saying that the last time he was on that there is more of a trend towards, at least in Ireland, for people to be looking for lighter beers for at least for midweek. Is that you're not seeing that?
I don't know. I think the trend is now, especially in Ireland, is just people looking for good beers. Yes. You know, I haven't seen any marked increase in our lower ABVs overselling their higher ABV beers. But there is the Irish craft beer consumer has become a lot more in tune with quality over the last few years. And it's fantastic because it's kind of weeding out all the weaker beers and forcing breweries to put a lot more effort into it. You know, whereas it's not just a case of dumping as much hops into a beer and calling it a double IPA and away you go, you know. So the Irish market has just become fantastic at the minute for spotting quality and buying quality, which is great. It's weird. It's a weird landscape at the minute with all the pubs kind of semi-open and closed and stuff. So maybe when the pubs open back up, we'll see another resurgence of lower ABV beers on keg for those few pints. But hopefully now in 2 weeks our pubs open up completely fully again, and we'll have a nice little run into Christmas. Until then, sure, no one knows.
Right. Yeah, and most of your stuff was always two pubs, was it? Cans are. Or were you mainly distribution retail?
For up until 2019, we were kind of 50-50. We are kind of exporting to about 11 different countries outside of Ireland as well. So there was a good mix between can and keg. But obviously then it was 100% can for 18 months. And now it's opening back up again. We've started seeing a bit of a resurgence in kegs again in Ireland, which is great. So we use a company called Four Corners for our distribution in Ireland. And, you know, they've put in their first big order for kegs this month for the first time in, I don't know, 19 months or something like that, or 20 months. So, hopefully we'll get back to being 50-50 can and keg again. We'll see. Kegging's a lot, from a production perspective, kegging is a lot easier than canning. So, you know, I'd sell everything in keg and nothing in can if we could do that, because it's much less work.
And how is that
where do we have to sing about that? I prefer as well kegging.
Yeah.
For us, we moved the brewery just in the beginning of the pandemic in December 2019. No,
yeah.
See. We just moved in another place, and we were waiting all our the new brew house fermenters. So we received this in March 2020.
Wow.
Just in the moment of dead.
Shit.
And we, for many months, we have to start the brewery by ourselves because people from APA, from America, they can't come. So we have to do everything by ourselves. And we started, like you say, like 15, just with cans, no keg. And we really don't work with supermarkets and that kind of places. So we had difficult months. But right now, we are, like you, more or less 50-50 cans and kegs, who is very nice. I hope we are increasing the kegs.
Yeah.
Here, I'm just going to tell you, Taras from Octo Brewery in Cyprus has a question. So we're going to actually bring him up and see if he'll come and join us and join in. How to do that. He's disappeared. This thing has disappeared. This was his question. Let me find him and bring him up. There he goes. He was asking about grape wines. You mentioned grapes a while ago.
Yeah, hello. Do you hear me?
We can hear you. We can't see you, but we can. There you go.
Yes.
Let me turn this one off and bring you up here. Do-do-do. So, Taras, you're in Cyprus.
Yes, we are in Cyprus. We are a microbrewery from Cyprus. And nice to hear you guys. Nice to see you guys. If you plan to visit Cyprus, you are welcome.
Definitely.
Yeah. I write your question about your uniqueness. Do you find your unique beer for your market, for your customer? We start also, of course, from lager, from Weiss, from IPA. But then we touch the grape ale. We start to make beer with our Xenisteri juice. And we make collaboration with the Germany. We start to export to the Germany. And we feel it like a good potential to make collaboration with a country who don't have grape and make together some beers which can produce in Cyprus and send it all around the world.
Okay.
and we are looking for some also possibility to brew with somebody some kind of beer which better produce out of Cyprus, who need more malt, for example. For us, we deliver all malt in Cyprus, and it's expensive. So it's better to deliver a collaboration beer, which we can produce in a country which have cheap malt next to brewery.
Yeah.
Is somebody have some experience like this?
Yeah, we've never brewed a grape ale before. I suppose, given the fact that it's Ireland, we don't have much experience in grapes. We don't have the climate. Although we do have good malt, which is always good. But the closest we've got to brewing a grape ale was brewing a Brett beer with a lot of white wine grapes.
Yeah,
that was it. It was basically dry grapes, you know. But other than that, no, we've never had any experience of using grapes in a beer, really, or grape ale.
Kevin, you're right. You have very good malt in Ireland. So yeah. it's one of the possibilities.
And it's very cheap.
It's not cheap. It's not cheap. in Spain, no. we are trying to talk with someone in Ireland to see if we can buy our pale ale there.
I'll send you some. I'll send you some contacts, Javier. I'll send you some contacts from some Irish guys.
Yeah, because it's true that for the base malt, the pale ale in Ireland, I like very much. We have tried, I can't remember the brand, but we tried once and I like very much.
Excellent. I'll send you some contacts today of people to talk to in Ireland for a malt.
Okay, Kettle, can you hear us? Yeah, I see your message. Can you...
I can hear you, but it seems like my camera doesn't cooperate.
Okay, man.
So, anyways, as for Cyprus, I mean, I'm the island of Crete, and we get excellent malts from Vergina, the north of... they don't have many specialty malts, but they have like five or six different base malts. And it's cheap. The price point is really good.
We use it, this malt. Yes. Kettle, we use Virginia also. It's not bad, and very close to us. The closest malt to Cyprus.
That keeps the shipping cost lower. Robert.
Yeah, I guess big off on islands in the middle of the Mediterranean. Neither of you. Yeah, it's not going to be cheap.
It's not going to be cheap.
You can live in paradise. No, constant sunshine, but you have to pay a little bit more for your malt. So I don't know which one is, you know, to weigh up your options, really.
well, the prices from Vergina is really competitive. So unless the shipping cost is high, it's a really good malt variety to you, I can assure you.
So you've been, you've got a complicated story. So you started off in Norway, what, 2004, was it?
2002. Then I started the first... modern craft brewery in Norway, then we went into sake brewing. I was the first to brew sake commercially in Europe, and a few years later I decided, my wife team of the brewery, you know, as a larger group of owners agree on the path to follow, and we bought a vineyard on the island of Crete. We ended up brewing again there also, and now I'm the brewmaster of Axiom in Czech Republic, where I am right now. So I did different.
And this solo, I mean, looking at the two, solo is like that's very local, is it?
Not really.
All right.
We are focused on the island of Crete. We do have this to the rest of the country also, but we have to remember that the craft beer culture is very young in Greece, so it's not a huge market, but it's developing and it's going to. This weekend, our guys are up in Thessaloniki. There's a beer festival there. So we're pretty much everywhere. But you have to remember that the craft beer market is quite small.
Right. And is it...
The thing we are doing which makes us a bit different from the other breweries, is the fact that we, in small batches, we package just in time, and we have refrigerated warehouse. So typically, when you drink one of our beers in Greece, it's been inside the bottle or keg less than 2 or 3 weeks.
Nice.
And we are spoiling our customers. So now they package for more than 4 weeks when they receive. So for that reason, we think that we have the best Greek beers, the best products in the country, because we are so focused on process, packaging, avoid oxidation, and freshness and refrigeration.
Right. And then with Axiom, how do you split your what beers you're making between the two?
Well, when it's allowed to travel, I mean, in times without lockdowns or what, then typically 10 days per month in Czech Republic and the remaining.
All right. Mm. But how do you decide what beers you're going to do for the Czech? And, like, is it based on the culture of the...
Well, you know, in my own brewery, it's very simple because I can myself, as a brewery, of course, I don't do it myself. I discuss with the other guys as a brewer and make the decisions on what to brew. Axiom employee, and I brew what they think the market wants. And I'm a conservative, I relative. So here I brew all sorts of shit with lactose and all sorts of fruit concentrate. Nipah with almost zero bitterness, stupidness. But the market loves it. I'm professional and I can brew anything. So that's fine.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about before. If people want to drink these, we have to brew these.
Yeah, and these days it seems like people want beer to taste like a cocktail.
Yeah,
so it's like a juice and like a perfume.
Yes,
yeah.
Totally right.
Yeah, I had some recently. I had and basically it was a smoothie. It was a fruited sour, and it was just a smoothie. No taste of beer at all in it.
We've done a couple of them.
I want to ask you about what you were talking before about the distribution. And I'm quite romantic, and for me, the craft beer is something local. So if I can sell my beer around my home, for me, it's better than sending 100 kilometers away.
Okay.
I know that we can't live only with the people around. But I think because of delicadeza, our beer is delicate, so we have to take care. And what you were saying, we also have in the brewery, we have a cold chamber. Everything who is in the bottle, in the can, in the keg, is in 5 degrees. And we try to sell, put it direct in the final. I think it's the best way to do it, but what do you think? Because there's many people who thinks it's better going in other countries and selling as much as you can. For me, it's quite incongruente.
When I was in Nørre Norwegian Brewery, I started. We exported a lot. In fact, exported to like 45 different countries, and I traveled extensively to North and South America, to Asia, to Australia. Everywhere. It was a lot of fun. But I realized that the quality of the beer, I mean, beer doesn't travel very well, with the exception of stout, of course. But most beers do not travel very well. If I travel and I come to a craft beer bar somewhere, I always go for first the local beer and number two, the national beer. I avoid the imported beer because do not travel well.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. It's kind of different in Ireland because, the craft beer scene is fantastic in Ireland. The people who drink craft beer, the Irish craft beer drinkers are unbelievable. But it's only a country of 5 million people. You know, there's cities in Europe which are bigger than the whole population of Ireland. So for us, export is key. We have to export because our laws in Ireland are kind of a bit draconian, that we're not allowed to have tap rooms. We're not allowed to have our own bars within the brewery. So most of the breweries in Ireland are just production breweries. And you're all fighting for the same shelf space and fighting for the same taps. So for us, export is huge. But we have the way we work on export is that when we package our beers, they head out to the various countries within a few days of packaging. And we know our distributor in Spain or our distributor in Holland or our distributor in Sweden, when they receive the beer, it's less than 2 weeks old and they're selling it fresh as well, because there's no point in us or any brewery spending you know, half the money to brew a beer on hops. If the beer doesn't get sold for 6 months and all the hops have faded. So we make a big push. Again, in Ireland, our cold rooms only use 7 months of the year because the other 5 months of the year, it's actually colder outside than it is in our cold room. But yeah, we make a big push to get our beers out fresh and making sure that whoever's spending their money on our beers, wherever they are in Europe, are getting the best product possible. Like I don't think many breweries in Ireland could survive solely on just selling beer in Ireland because it's such a small population, you know, and it's only maybe 4% of the adult population drink craft beer, or less than that probably. So it's a really small market to play to. So if you want to be sustainable, you have to export. And about 75% of what we produce is exported outside of Ireland. That's probably what we produce under our own brands anyway. Yeah.
So you're mentioning European countries mostly, and that to quite a bit of control there.
Yeah,
because it's quite new. From Solo in Greece, we occasionally send some beer to Cyprus, but the other export country for us is Australia.
Wow.
And okay, so it's a guy makes cheese and things which require refrigeration, so it's refrigerated, but still it takes away all our control of how the product is when it reaches its final consumer, and that makes me very uncomfortable.
Of course. Yeah. We'd be the same. Ireland, like, from Ireland, I know, well, this whole Brexit shit show has kind of kicked us in the ass a little bit, but normally shipping in Ireland anywhere in Europe maybe 5 days, and it was great. From when it leaves our breweries to when it hits the cold room or our distributor. So we could stand behind our beers knowing that they'll always be fresh. Like, we've never stuck a beer in a container to go on a ship. So I don't know how I'd feel about that. It'd be quite stressful, I imagine.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I know, Paris, you mentioned that as well, that you're like trying to control the beer temperatures down in Cyprus is quite difficult. Yeah.
Guys, I have one question. How are you fighting with the high temperature, especially in Spain and in Greece? We can't manage it. We have to working only with the customer who have fridge, or we start to make system with big fridge and our barrels inside, and we tap straight from the fridge. You have some experience with beer at 40 degrees outside.
It is a challenge. And usually, I guess, as a person or a company, appreciate big orders and to sell a lot, you know, because that's cash and the business is working well. But for our case, do the opposite way around. When we get a big order from a distributor or from a bar, then we try to persuade them juicing the order and rather to order twice a week or, you know, like, yeah, twice a week instead of ordering twice a month. Because then if they don't have refrigeration, at least the beer is kept in warm conditions for only a couple of days.
Here we are doing just the same thing, because many people has refrigeration in even in distribution or bars. They have a small refrigerated chamber. But when people don't have something like this, we are doing the same thing. I tell him, this week I send you 6 barrels, next week 6 again. Better than sending 30 barrels in just once. And he will take a month, 2 months with the barrels in 13 degrees. It's not working.
Yeah, I suppose that there's nothing worse than, yeah, you know that you produced a good beer, but knowing that by the time someone's drinking it, they're not really knowing what, you know, they're getting a bad impression of you because of someone else's kind of laxness.
Yeah, this is the biggest problem, that we take care about our beers, and once you put out your hand, you don't know what the others will do, but we have no choice.
True. It's I'd like to comment that I find it ironic. You go to Scandinavia, where it's pretty cool most of the year. Brewers do not have refrigeration or storage area at all. And the beers are very often not fantastic because they've been sitting in a 22-degree normal room temperature room for months. But if you go to certain areas where it's hot, the whole year through, like Vietnam or Singapore, then you realize that the great, they're in fantastic condition because they're kept refrigerated all the time. And it's ironic, isn't it? In the countries where it's most, where it's more challenging to keep the beers in good condition, is where they are act do it. And in the cold climate countries, people get too relaxed.
Yeah, so it's, I suppose, like you said, it's just ironic. Just a matter of being aware of it. If it's generally cold, you think it's cold all the time, and you just don't really, you're more worried about warming things up. So I'm sorry, I just let you know, I opened your, one of yours, Javier. It's a X2R IPA. That's the one.
Which one?
This one.
Ah, it's you will tell me. I like very much.
Yeah, no, it's very nice. It's again, I'm not. Not an expert on hops at all. Not couldn't tell you what hops are in it, but it's a nice bitterness. It's just, it's not too bitter, but it's got a nice bitterness to it.
Yeah, it's quite and bitter. And it's malty as well.
Yeah, and it's got a nice body. Nice body. That's
I was so surprised when I looked at these cans from Brew and Roll, where I see that I've used 580, other one is 92. These days, the world is moving in the other direction, and it's like things are, IPAs are getting less and less bitter. And these three are like classic, curative in bitterness. And I was smiling when I saw it.
Yeah. I think as a consensus, especially with brewers, we need to bring back bitterness.
This is what I like. So yeah. Sometimes we brew what we prefer. Other times we brew what we are supposed to do.
The most important thing in a beer is balance. And most beers are, in one way or another, quite... And how do we balance it? Well, bitterness. Okay, we use roasted malts and stuff as well. But bitterness is key to balancing the body of a beer.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. See. Nothing makes us happier than when we're brewing a beer, like a West Coast, and we get the cans off the line, we go home a couple of days later and crack open a West Coast and taste a bit of bitterness, because... A lot of what we produce is New England IPAs, 20 IBUs, and you know, what fantastic beer. You do crave bitterness.
Yeah, the sweetness, like you said, a lot of them are just fruit juices now. It's I don't know, people like them, I suppose, if it's better, you know, they can have them, but they're not my style. What I've started finding a lot, like I mentioned earlier, is lambics. I'm kind of got real interest in the lambics and the sours, the kind of complexities of those.
Brett beers are my vice. I'm not a huge fan of kettle sours itself. I find them a bit one-dimensional. But you get a good wild beer with a good Brett beer, or like a Belgian, the Straffa Hendrick Wild or something like that. That's my weak point.
Yeah, no, I've had one from Dock. They had a Saison, a mixed fermentation Saison, which I still can remember tasting. Brilliant. But you'd probably have a lot more that, because Norway seems to have retained a lot of the kind of the more farmhouse traditions as well. I mean, if you look at, you know, Kvike, so I'm just saying that being from Norway, I mean, Norway, looking at it from outside, seems to have retained a lot more of its kind of traditional farmhouse styles as well. Or at least, you know, small farmhouse brewers. And I wonder if that kind of influences anything there. Is it a big...
You know, this is a very small, local, non-commercial thing. limited to maybe a very few farms who has been doing it. So it's not really it's not really a culture or something everybody relates to. It's something which maybe a neighborhood, a village.
Okay.
It's very local, and the fact that this has been, what can I say, discovered the past few years has had an impact on the craft brew. But if you go into a village, a fjord, or in Norway, it's really something extremely local. The reason why it is like this, developed into this in Norway, is because of the geography, where you have valleys, fjords, where you could not travel to the neighboring valleys of the mountains and the climate, you know, with winters and everything. So these Kvike strain would be very, very local, be part of a village or one fjord or one valley. And A lot of people talk about kveik as if it's one thing, but the only thing they have in common, A, ferment at high temperatures, and B, they can be dried and stored. Everything else about kveik is totally random. Kveik strains from one valley to the next, totally different. Some are mixed cultures, some are fruity. It's really very difficult to talk about kveik as one thing because it's a lot.
Yeah, it's interesting that it came out. I was wondering, like what we were saying earlier about is, you know, hazy IPAs dominating everything at the moment. But I was wondering, like, you know, you hear about kveik, you hear about all that, whether, you know, whether they're going to kind of farmhouse techniques, lambics, sour saisons are going to slowly gain more prominence.
About that kind of beers, we were talking before the kettle sours, and did you try the Philip sour from Lallemand? I've tried twice or three times with that yeast, and I really like.
Yeah,
I think it's going on better than the kettle sour, the other one they had before.
Yeah, we any of the sours that we make, the straight up sours, we don't kettle sour. We use the souring yeast. There's a yeast propagator, a lab in Ireland who's produced his own strain of this wine yeast that sours your beer. So creates a little bit of alcohol, ferments about 10 points, but it creates a lot of lactic acid. And then you repitch a secondary yeast on top of that, then whatever it is, New England yeast or, you know, US05 or something to finish it off. So all of the sours that we make aren't actually kettle sours. They're soured by the yeast and then fermented out by a thing, which gives a nice, better, rounded kind of sourness to the beer rather than a kettle sour, which I find to be very one-dimensional. So, we've done it. We've used that yeast maybe 10 times, I think, overall for different beers, and it's really good, really good. It only sours to about a pH of about 3.5 as well, so it's not too sour. So it's kind of a bit more accessible for everybody else.
So the question initially was about...
From Lamaland, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I've tried it once and I didn't find it fast. It was very slow. What we are using, Axiom Solo, is a simple thing. We take Pilsner malt or Pale Ale malt. We put them in women's, stocking pantyhose because it's very thin fabric. And we toss it into hot wort at 40 degrees Celsius. We flush it with CO2 to make it anaerobic. And the morning after, 3.4. That is made. This is not. It works very well. And it is, of course, multi-strain lactobacillus. It's not a mono. Another thing I've done, which is a little bit more unpredictable, but which works really well, is also to focus on 48 degrees and take a bottle of Driefonteinen or Cantillon, chug it in. Yeah. And you only need one bottle for 20 hectoliters beautifully. But the good thing, you have killed the Brettanomyces. But the lactobacillus is working at full speed.
Excellent. Okay, that's a new one. I haven't heard those techniques before.
This is a good way to get the multi-strain lactobacillus infection. So you avoid the simple and monoculture.
Okay,
excellent.
Well, there's a new tip to be trying. Go out and get some pills tomorrow.
No, no, I might have to sacrifice one of my drinking bottles of candy on for my next brew.
sorry, one second. My dog just walked into the room. So yeah, listen, you've been around a while. There was one question because Kevin, I heard you on the podcast there last week. You were on a podcast, and I wanted to ask what the others thought that you were giving out. Let's say a little bit anyway, about untapped. that it's changed. And I remember a few months ago, we had someone on and we had a rant against untapped as well. And I want to see if you think it's changing the whole beer thing, like you were saying about having to brew to the market and having to brew a new beer all the time.
Let me clarify that rant a little bit because it got taken out of context, I think. I wasn't complaining too much about untapped as such, but untapped, in fairness, has got us a lot of sales. Outside of Ireland, if people don't know who we are, the first thing they're going to do is check untapped or check this and no. And it's great. What I was complaining about is the very small minority of people who now only drink beer once just so they can rate it on untapped and then move on to the next beer. And it kind of ruins what beer should be. Beer should be accessible to everybody. You should find a beer that you like and drink it, you know. But a lot of people seem to be more, not a lot of people actually, a very small minority of craft beer drinkers seem to be more interested in receiving badges and Untappd than actually enjoying the beer that they're buying. And it's tough because, like, all the guys know here, it's, you know, it's damn hard to make a good beer. You know what I mean? And it's even harder to make a good business around it so you can get that beer out. And then for people just to discount your beer, just to drink it and give you a 3 or 5 or whatever to give you just so they can get a badge, it's kind of a bit disconcerting, really, you know? And that's 1%, less than 1% of Untappd users, I say. And the other 99% are just absolutely legend craft beer drinkers and who love your stuff and love drinking beer. But there is a small minority of people who literally drink beer just to get badges, and it really annoys me.
I think there's a driving license should be an Untappd license. If you don't know what you are drinking and what you are saying, it's better closing your mouth. But as you say, there's people who prefer putting numbers and trying 1,000 beers per month, but they don't really know what they are saying in Untappd.
Yep, I agree.
And do you think
that's totally right? And I find it's very sad that cannot have some calm mind of joy. And when they walk in their bar, they recognize it. Wow, I know I'm in for a good experience. Because for these, it's not about the comfort and enjoyment. It's like the new. It's like having a one night stand every time you want to have it. And I find this parallel to a lot of people how they. It's like so you. They have a great dinner in a restaurant or perhaps with friends. And instead of sitting down and enjoying the company, enjoying the meal, they are so focused on taking photos of it and put on whatever social media instead. So they are not present with their mind. They're not with their enjoyment because their mind is somewhere else. And that's the same thing as Untappd people as well. I think it's sad.
Yeah. Yeah, it's only a very small minority of people in it, but it nearly drives this need for producing new beers all the time. And you know, as brewers, there's nothing better than, like, I've been brewing one beer for the last 9 years. It's not the same beer because it's changed a million times, but it's changed because we've tried to perfect that one beer constantly to make it better and make it the best we can make it. And you're always tinkering with the water chemistry or you're tinkering with everything. And you don't get a chance to do that anymore because we're just churning out new beer after new beer after new beer. But I do, in Ireland especially, though, I do see a change happening. I think people are getting, there's a bit of fatigue for new beers. And I think, you know, maybe next year or the year after, we'll start seeing a bit more of a shift back towards core range beers for breweries, which should be glorious because, you know, like, as a brewer and a brewery owner, you know, you spend so long trying to learn your craft, you learn that in specific beers. That it's a little bit soul destroying when you're just churning out new beer after new beer every week.
Yeah, it's I think just the same thing. It's too sad that we have a good beer. You try to do it the best way, and if you think you can go better, you will change something just to make it better.
Yeah.
And you are doing this, but people has tried it once and they don't want to try it twice.
Yeah,
they want another one, different one, and
and have you seen more of that? Because I see that, like, I suppose, like, if you go back, you know, people like the Heinekens, the Carlsbergs, Guinnesses, like, their brewery was built around one beer, one brand that people would drink. And okay, we can argue about what the quality of that became, but now it's more like, you know, people won't drink that again. So breweries have kind of come up with a different brand. That's the brewery that you just...
Yeah, I think it's shifted. Like you were saying, the Heineken, the beer is the brand. And McGuinness, the beer is the brand. Where with us now, I think the brand is the beer.
Yeah.
Same thing, but it's just flipped around on the side, you know. So we hope when people see Third Barrel beers, they, regardless of whether they drank it before, they kind of, or they drank that beer before, they'll know that I've had other Third Barrel beers, so the quality must be good. Whereas, you know, when you look at the big guys, it's just based on their individual beer. Everything has to taste the same. You know, and I suppose that's where the kind of whole craft beer revolution came from, wasn't it? It's that the beers don't have to taste the same every time. It can taste better. You know, they can constantly evolve with what the market is. So, but yeah, I think for craft breweries, I think the brand is the beer as such.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, that you're going to look for, if people aren't drinking your your beer a second time, then you have to produce a new beer. You at least have to have kind of satisfy them the first time round that they're going to go and look for you from you again.
Exactly. Yeah. When I started brewing 20 years ago, it was all about being creative to allow your inspiration and create the tool to make new beers. And if I didn't like a beer, then I brewed what I liked. And yeah. I brewed what I was proud of. And these days, yeah. and the last, well, maybe more than the last 5 years, but also the last 10 years, people have used Rate Beer and now Untappd as the tool. The brewers have used it as a tool to change direction of the beers. It's not about what you're proud of. It's not about what you want. And it's not about your creativity, which comes from inside you. But it's about analyzing the rating Untappd. And previously, it was Rate Beer a while ago. And this is not... Is it? This is not about the art doing removed. It's all about financial together with technical.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think everybody seems to agree on that.
Okay. Yeah. Boys, I have to leave. I have to take care of my kid.
Okay. I suppose we'll allow you to do that.
Nice to meet you. And you too. I will appreciate if you can send me when you try the beers what you think about them.
Definitely. And I will email you this afternoon, Javier, with some details of some good Irish malt.
Very nice. Thank you so much, Kevin. Very nice to spend time with you, Javier, your barley wine at the moment.
Boom.
Thank you so much. Well.
Okay. Bye. Thanks, Javier. Thanks a million for joining.
Thanks, Javier. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
I think we're losing. Yeah. Okay. He's got... So I don't know. How the rest of you, do you have any topics you want to mention that we didn't? Kettle, what do you see as the difference? Like, just looking again, as I was looking briefly through the Czech scene, there seems to be an awful lot of brewers there, and they're all, again, you know, pilsners and that, but they seem to be doing a lot of trying to pretend, you know, we have a long, long history.
So yeah, the Czech beer is very based on tradition, because after all, they're proud. But it's loosening up, it's becoming more and more, and there are quite of really good. But the funny thing here is that you have a lot of conservative people who are actively fighting the craft beer scene. You have people who go on social media and say, don't drink IPA, because if you're drinking an IPA, you're not loyal to your tradition and proud of pilsners or lager. So it's really a culture where you have confrontation, and that's kind of strange. We wow. here at Axiom, we actually do both. We do double decoction lagers as well as all the shit we do. So yes, we do everything.
That's great, I suppose. Given that we're in Ireland, where I suppose the only beer culture we have was the Agio. Like, up until 100 years ago, there was, I don't know how many breweries in Ireland. And then, you know, the Agio took them over, closed them down. Or Guinness took them over and closed them down, should I say. So we don't have that locality when it comes to beer. You know, everything was Guinness. So when the craft beer when the craft beer scene kind of first kicked off in Ireland, I think a lot more people were accepting of it. And I can see where they're coming from in the Czech Republic. If you're saying now, people are thinking, you know, traditional breweries are dying out because of IPA, stuff like that. You know, I can see why they might be a bit protective over it.
Well, I think are dying from the craft because it's very small. This has no foundation in the real, you know, it's more like, yeah. What I've learned here during 2.5 years has been a lot with regards to brewing decoction lagers. Decoction is so cool. That's it.
No.
The
brew house we bought was actually bought from the Czech Republic. It was an old VPS brew house where the guy who used it previously just made pilsners, 10 different types of pilsners. And same thing, full decoction, where he'd pull off 20% of the mash grain thing into the kettle, boil it, send it back to raise the temperature, and constantly do that. And I think he'd done about 4 or 5 steps in his mash before he sent everything, before he lautered and sent it to the boiler. So, yeah, it's a traditional style, but I think with grains being so well modified now, you don't really have to do it. Do you? Like, for like, well, no, the lager malt we use is so well modified, we don't need to step more decoction at all.
That's what I thought as well, two and a half years. And I play now this because because the decoction process is so much rich maltiness, the caramel, caramel. I'm lost for word. English is not my first language.
It's flavor or aroma?
Flavor, aroma, character to the beer.
Character, yeah.
Without any sweet or cloying, it's just presence in a neutral way. And you cannot get this. Some people say, we have melanoidine malt. Why do we do decoction mashing? But I totally disagree. Decoction mashing is fantastic. But yes, it takes a lot. Normal brew day here in hours. If we do double decoction, it takes 11. If we do triple decoction, it takes 12. Wow. Yes, it's a long brew day. But it's worth it.
I'll give it a go. We have a house pilsner that we brew under one of our brands, and it's a traditionalish pilsner using Hallertau Irish lager malt or a pilsner malt plus a little bit of melanoidin. But normally we just straight up step. We don't straight up mash. There's no steps. It's literally just mash at 64 and away we go. But maybe in the next lager brew, we'll give it a go and we can do a side-by-side tasting.
Do you have equipment so you can do decoction mashing?
Yeah, our whole brewery, as I say, it's an old VPS. It's an old Russian brew, but it used to be from the Czech Republic where we bought it and it was built for. So, yeah, we can pull everything off to the kettle and use the kettle to heat it up to push back into the mash to raise the temperature. So.
Amazing. You should give it a go one day.
Yeah, I think we do. I'd love to do it side by side because we brew this beer every kind of second week. So I'd like to do it side by side.
I need to warn you, if you do this, then there is no way back.
I've just added weeks of labor onto our annual production. And
there's all your profits gone for the year.
What profits? What profits? We're in craft beer. There's no profits in craft beer.
Well, all your imaginary profits, all those figures that you showed the accountant.
Yeah,
there's a lot of those techniques that, I mean, I wonder, like, you know, brewing has become very, you know, it's scientific, it's all of this, but there's an awful lot of those techniques that are still out there that people just, you know, that lived on in the farmhouse. And I mean, I remember we had a thing with Lars Garschel a couple of months ago on, you know, Lithuanian beers, and the farmhouse techniques are they're quite unusual. But I wonder whether there's any place for them, like if they add that amount of time.
Yeah, but I think that's the thing about beer. Beer's been spawned from tradition. It's been brewed for, I don't know, commercially for hundreds of years. And we won't even go back to the Chinese who first brewed it 2,000 or 3,000 years ago. Everything is brewed from tradition, you know, and some of the, especially the farmhouse side of things, they've been brewing it that way for so long. Why change? You know, some of the techniques probably could be modernized or some of them might be irrelevant, but this is it's more tradition than anything else. And I think if it wasn't for tradition, especially in beer, there'd be no beer industry. You know, it's built on tradition. Same way as some of the processes we use, like we talk about lauter and vorlauf and mash tun and stuff like that. Like, these are old English words that have no relevance in actual brewing, but they carry through from the tradition that it is. So, you know, while... Yeah, things can be modernized in the brewing. Things have been modernized in the brewing industry. It's nice to still have a bit of tradition come through in it as well.
Yeah. No, I wonder though whether you could see that there's a maybe it would just be a gimmick to have a lot of those techniques, you know, made beer made with a particular technique, and it's maybe then just a gimmick that someone's using rather than adding anything. But it sounds like in this case it does add.
Yeah, but that's it. It does add. Well, I'll hopefully find out in a couple of weeks. But like, if you talk about Guinness, like you talk about gimmicks in the beer industry, like this two-part pour for Guinness, like that's a gimmick. You know, that's nothing on the final pint of beer. You know, whereas these things might necessarily be gimmicks. It might be some of the processes. I'm not talking about the cat mash or the double decoction or anything like that, but maybe in the farmhouse thing, some of the techniques might be a little bit irrelevant, but it doesn't take away from the beer. So what's you know, if it's tradition, let it go. I say hats off and keep it going, lads.
Yeah,
Okay.
This reminds me of a good friend of mine, a Danish brewmaster and lecturer, Anders Kissmeyer, had a statement many years ago, and he said, just because someone does something to brew the beer, has a technique or tradition which you don't recognize and which goes against the grain, don't find that there are dogmas. This is how you miss is not the good. If someone makes good beer one way or another, with one tradition or one unique hint or technique, respect it, because there are hundreds of ways to make beer and there are no dogmas.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that's a great sentiment to finish on, really, isn't it? Listen, I don't, unless I've missed something that you particularly want to raise, I want to thank you both for taking part. No, I know everybody got bits of beers and other people will be getting them on Monday and things like that, but so we never really got into the specifics of each beer, but I think it was a good chat, though.
No, well, I must say, though, that we tasted all three Axiom beers that were sent over, and they were fantastic. Delightful.
It's been a pleasure to be with you guys, and I haven't had time to open any of the third barrel beers yet, but look forward to it so much.
Excellent. So drop me a message and let me know what you think.
I will, certainly.
All right, guys. Listen, thanks a million.